Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslovsky. This is not your typical intro, and don't you worry, you won't have to listen to me sing poorly very often. And trust me, this will make sense very soon. Nothing is wrong. Me and my baby just get along. We can't seem to lose. We got those nothing blues. This is episode number 31. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Smart and Simple Matters. This is a special episode for a number of reasons, but the biggest reason is because I'm about to make my biggest announcement ever on the show. Are you ready? Because here I go. On Wednesday, September 18th at 9:01 a.m. Central Standard Time, my second son, Clark Zeslovsky, joined the rest of us in this world. I instantly cried tears of joy as the midwife took Clark and rested him on my wife, Melinda's chest. Wow. Wow. The guy let out a gentle cry. He blew some bubbles in the giant tub where Melinda gave birth, and the smiles and pictures, they commenced. I'm going to have to take a step back because I know you're probably looking for some stats. So here are some numbers to paint the start of your mental picture. Clark was born 8 pounds, 11 ounces. That's 3,930 grams. 22 inches long, also known as 56 centimeters, and generated around 11 billion hugs, smiles, and kisses within his first hour. I got to tell you, the delivery process itself was pretty smooth this time around, at least as far as something as major as pushing a kid out of your body can be smooth. Melinda woke me up at about 5 o'clock in the morning and hinted that it was go time. So I jumped out of bed. I rounded up our stuff. I called my mom and dad just across town to come over and take care of our almost 3-year-old son, Grant, until we got back from the hospital, and we hit the road at 7:30 a.m. We got to the triage room at about 8, and it was serious business time already. And just 1 hour later, Clark said, "Yo, world, I am in the house." Mama and Clark recovered quickly, and then 36 hours after Clark joined us, we arrived home. And it's only been a few days, but I'm already declaring Clark a big deal and a super duper uber little fella. I posted a few more details and a couple of pictures of me, Melinda, and Clark on Value of Simple this past Thursday. So if you simply must see pictures, go to valueofsimple.com/Hiya-Clark. That's HIYA-CLARK. And you can check it out. I posted even more pictures on the Value of Simple Facebook page. So head over there too if cute newborns are your thing. And already I've received an outpouring of digital hugs and high fives, congrats and kudos. I just feel so grateful to be in the kind of community that celebrates the joyous moments with you. And if you are one of those people that has given me a good old pat on the back, literally or figuratively, I appreciate the heck out of you. And I'm looking forward to celebrating the big moments in your life too. Now, I could go on about Clark. I really, really could. But I promised to explain the intro song to this episode, and I need to deliver. The lyrics I sang came from a song in a music class our family has been a part of for the past couple of years called Music Together. The song is called Nothing Blues, as in I have nothing to be blue about because me, my baby, and my toddler, which that would be Grant, we just get along. But the nothing part has a double meaning because this episode is literally and figuratively about nothing. And as you'll hear me elaborate on in a moment, my guest is one of my best friends of all time, Jessie Kanowski, and she has a lot of awesomeness to say about how and why we should get a whole lot more nothing in our lives. Jessie lives about 10 minutes from me, so she came over to my house to record the episode, which is pretty groovy. And because I didn't have an ideal podcasting setup to host our fantastic chat, you'll notice the sound quality isn't quite professional grade, but do not fret. And do not let that get in the way of a conversation so deep and so meaningful that it might change the way you think about the concept of nothing forever. So there you go, my friend. I got the nothing blues because Clark is giving me nothing to be blue about, and Jesse is giving me many reasons to want a whole lot more of nothing. Bring your smiles, something to write or type on, because the insight overflows in this one. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome to a special episode of the Smart and Simple Matters Show, everyone. This is different from all the rest because my guest today is sitting just a few feet in front of me in the comfort of my own home. I've done an in-person podcast before when I took my show on the road to interview Jen Koons about becoming an accidental daily money manager in episode 11, but I've never had the pleasure of someone ringing my doorbell and saying, "I'm here for the show." So today I have my old and dear friend, Jesse Kanowski, ready to drink some tea with me and talk about nothing. Yes, we are going to literally talk about nothing today. Not in a Seinfeld, this is a show about nothing kind of way, but in a deep, spiritual, and powerful, let's strip away all the excess in life until the only thing we want more of is nothing kind of way. Now, I'm not quite sure how to introduce a woman as amazing as Jesse in less than, about an hour, but I'll give it a shot. Jesse was born and raised in my hometown of St. Paul, Minnesota, and despite going to the same high school, we didn't become really good friends until we both landed at the University of Wisconsin-Madison for college. She is passionate about a lot of things, including art and music, being an awesome mother, generating insane value inside the public health industry in her current role as a global health service company, is renowned for her clothing creativity by not wearing the same set of clothes for a decade or so, and perhaps most fascinating for all you listeners out there, she's a float tank enthusiast who goes on unbelievable journeys when she gets in the tank. Although she doesn't define herself as a minimalist or simplicity seeker, Jesse has a lot to share about how to have more nothing in your life and why it's so freaking important. I asked her to come on the show to share her personal journey, her experience in the float tank, and how the pursuit of needing little and wanting less leads to a happy and healthy existence. So welcome to the show, Jesse. Super stoked. Doesn't even begin to tell you how excited I am to introduce you to the thousands of people who are going to be listening to this one.
Thank you, Joel. I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me in your home and on your show.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a seriously groovy one for you and for me and for a whole bunch of other folks. Now, we're going to start where I normally start with guests who come on the show, and we're going to talk about the seeds of awesomeness. Basically, who you are, the person that I see in front of me, was defined a long time ago, and you continue to evolve, which we'll get into a bit too, but give us a little bit of a snapshot. Maybe you could tell us one or two experiences that you had growing up, or maybe something about the environment of your youth that helped shape you into the person that you are today.
Well, Joel, one thing that I can tell you about myself is that I consider myself to be a continuous learner. Meaning, I always think that there is more to know and more to learn, and I believe that we've never arrived at the answer, that there's always more growth that we can experience throughout our lives, and that instead of necessarily floating down the river without paying much attention to what is around you, I think it takes a lot of courage to be able to stand against the current and continue to engage yourself in activities and relationships that challenge you in a way that is positive.
So what was one of those first times where you stood in that river and you saw the rushing water coming at you and you thought, you know what, I'm going to sit tight and I'm going to stand in this current and go against it?
When I think back, I've been reflecting a lot on my life the past couple of months. I've been going through some personal transformations and a lot of personal change in my life. And it's given me a reason to pause and look back and realize that this is not the first time that I have undergone this kind of change in my life. And the very first time that I decided to make a conscious change about myself and who I was and how I show up in the world and how I interact with other people was when I was 12. And I was in the seventh grade. Seventh grade was a very traumatic experience for me. And I realized that after going through that year at school, I was not satisfied with the way my life was going and the relationships that I had and the way that I was showing up in the world. So I decided to make a conscious choice to change myself. And I decided that I was going to put myself out there and make friends, and that I was going to talk to people that I didn't know before and talk to people that I maybe never would have talked to, just because I decided it would be valuable to be curious about things that I hadn't experienced before. And living in that safe, comfortable space just wasn't doing it for me anymore, and I wasn't getting the results that I wanted or the results that I needed to be able to live a fulfilled and satisfied life. And I came to that realization pretty early on. So I made a lot of changes to myself. And then eighth grade was much better. And every year since then has been continuously better. But that's when I really realized that there was something more that I wanted and that I had the power to control that.
It sounds like it took a little while, though. You talk about seventh grade and then getting into eighth grade and how it was better. But for at least a few months, there were probably some challenges, a lot of struggles that you had with flipping that switch and making that conscious decision that you wanted something different or more. Can you tell us maybe one of the challenges of making that change, or maybe a struggle, and how you dealt with that?
Well, I think one challenge is that the way that the people in your life might react to you could be unexpected. So there were some people that were very accepting of the changes that I wanted to make, and I think those are the people that have stayed my friends, and we've remained friends still, because they accept the fact that you are an evolving human being and they appreciate you and like you no matter what. No matter who you decide to become or how you decide to evolve or how you decide to change yourself, they are on board. And they have that unconditional support. Then there are people, one of the challenges I would say is interacting with the people who don't feel the same way about change or don't know what to do with that change or don't know how to take that change and relate it to themselves, or they don't know how to relate to you anymore now that you've gone through this transformation. And it's possible that you can lose some relationships that were previously important to you in order to be able to undergo this type of growth. So that was one of the challenges, is not being friends with people or not having people in my life that maybe were in my life previously because they felt like they didn't understand me. Whereas the interesting thing that's kind of ironic is that before undergoing this change, I never really understood myself. So how could anybody else really understand what I'm all about if I don't even understand myself what I'm all about? And ever since then, this has been an evolving process for me where I underwent, it seems every decade, I do some kind of deep evaluation of my life and self-assessment about where I'm at and what I've done up to this point and what my vision is for what I want going forward. And I underwent another transformation at 22 and now most recently again at 33.
Well, we'll talk about what it's like at 33 to undergo another personal evolution, but can you walk us back about a decade to when you were 22 and tell us a little bit about the catalyst for this after you were 12 and after you were in seventh grade and you made your first choice to very intentionally do and be somebody different than you previously were? What happened when you were in your early 20s that made you think it's time for me to change again?
Well, hindsight is 20/20, and so it's amazing how looking back you can see how each experience really built on the other. It's a cumulative effect. So once you make the changes, it's not like a decade passes and then those changes are out the window and it's time for all new stuff and forget everything that happened before. I think some amount of consistency is important. So to be able to maintain that, it's really more of a building process than a wipe the slate clean and start completely over process. So at 22, things have been going pretty well for about 10 years. I was getting the results that I wanted in my life and in my education and in my relationships, and personally and professionally felt like I was on the right path. Although at 22, I had graduated from college, and remembering those good times we had at Madison together, those were now in the past, that carefree life where you really don't have any responsibilities. That time was coming to an end, and it was time to get into the real world. And I reached a point where I was feeling somewhat lost about what to do next. And I could tell that I was at a pivotal moment in my life where there were several different paths that I could go down, and I needed to make a choice about what I wanted that to look like. So at the time in college, I was originally planning on going to medical school. I was pre-med in my undergrad. And the experience that changed all that for me was actually taking the MCAT exam. And I didn't do as well as I'd hoped in the areas that I needed to, although unexpectedly did quite well in the writing area, which I was completely not expecting. But unfortunately, that's not the part that they really put a huge amount of focus on.
And the MCAT is an exam that people take in preparation for getting into a program that leads eventually to you becoming a doctor, for example?
Correct.
Okay.
So the MCAT is an exam, and I have to apologize. It's an acronym, and I don't recall exactly what it stands for.
Yeah, I don't know what it is either, so I makes two of us. I'll put it in the show notes. If people want to know more about the MCAT, I'll link to it, and they can read everything that they want about it.
That would be great, because I have to tell you, this is a clear indication that I was not meant to be a doctor. I don't even remember what MCAT stands for, so that tells you that right there, but so I didn't do very well on this exam, which is the entrance exam you need to take in order to get into medical school, to apply. It didn't go the way I'd hoped. I didn't get the results that I wanted, so I decided it was probably time to change paths and that the universe was giving me a sign that this was probably not meant to be for me and that I should explore other options. So that's what I decided to do. I decided to leave the country. And I went and lived in Ecuador for a while and decided to get some real life experience outside of my comfort zone, living in the United States, living in St. Paul, living in Wisconsin, in Madison. I needed something more, and I needed to create something new for myself. I decided this other path that I'd previously been on was not going to be the right direction for me.
It's interesting you talk about having a number of paths laid out in front of you and maybe even being able to see some of them. And a number of options in which one you want to pursue. We're both at the point in our lives where it seems like there's almost an infinite number of possibilities. But sometimes the path that you want to go down is the path that doesn't lead anywhere. And this kind of gets us into, when I alluded to at the start of the show, how about we were going to talk about nothing. And when we were having a conversation a few months ago at a coffee shop, and you were telling me about your first float tank experience, and you said something to me that I still remember, and you said, all I want more of is nothing. So this path that we go down, is so many people set these huge goals and they have these huge desires, and they set their minds and their lifestyle to pursuing something that when they get it, sometimes they don't even want it anymore, don't need it. How did you come to this conclusion that one of the things that you wanted the most in life was a path that led to nothing?
I'm just going to pause right there and respond to something. Before you finish the rest of that question, I actually latched onto something you said in the very first part of the question, which was, what if you end up on a path that doesn't lead anywhere? If that's the case, I think some people see that as a negative thing. What if you end up on a path that doesn't lead anywhere? But the whole point of getting to a place where you're comfortable with nothing is being on a path that doesn't lead anywhere and shifting your perception about that. That can actually be a good thing, like a cul-de-sac. It doesn't go anywhere, it's a dead end, but those are some of the most highly valued properties because they're secluded and they're private and they're safe and they're quaint and they're in their own community. And it's almost like a pocket of existence that has its own culture and its own environment. So even if you're on a path that doesn't lead, as you say, and I'm making air quotes with my hand right now, lead anywhere, I think that sometimes that can be the best result if you can shift your perception to thinking of that as a positive thing, not like a dead-end job or a dead-end life where people talk about that, but more about a dead-end, like living your life at the end of a cul-de-sac. And you can always flip around and come back out again, but being comfortable in that space where it's almost circular and cyclical, and it doesn't always have to be about what's next. What's the next thing? Where am I going next? What's the next goal? What's the next big thing I have to accomplish? And just being comfortable with what is in the moment.
So, I get that too, is being present, being okay with the moment that you are experiencing right now instead of always being in the future or in the past. But let's talk about the past for one brief moment, because it sounds like you have a lot of experience. You use the analogy of a cul-de-sac and how you can end up in one and be very comfortable and feel very good about that. Can you tell us the last time you were in a cul-de-sac and what you did when you found yourself in that cul-de-sac?
I think I'm in a cul-de-sac right now.
Yeah?
I
how
do.
How so?
Well, you could call it a cul-de-sac. You could also... I also have an image in my head of riding at the top of a crest of a wave. It requires the same present mind and the same comfort level with nothing, if that's the situation that you happen to be in. And really going inside of yourself and being internal and self-reflective and introspective about your current state. So it's more about the state of mind than it is about necessarily your physical environment. And there are a lot of different analogies that I could use to describe that. And I think going back to your previous question about nothing, how do you get to nothing and how do you get comfortable with nothing, is when you're experiencing nothing, to find a way to love that, which is the place that I am in. So however you want to describe it and whatever analogy works best for you to relate it to, it's really what it comes down to is maintaining a present mind and loving nothing in addition to loving something.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you achieve this nothingness. You know, if there are other people who are listening and they're saying, this is great so far, but how do I get to that mental state? How do I feel this spiritual release? My words, not yours. And we've both spent time in a float tank or a sensory deprivation tank, an isolation tank. It goes by a lot of different names. But for the folks who don't know what a float tank is, it's this device where it's about 10 inches of water and it's loaded with as much salt as the Dead Sea. So you get in here, you close the lid behind you, and it is pitch black. You see nothing. You are floating in 10 inches of water, completely buoyant, and you feel no sense of gravity. It is completely, it's empty inside there. You hear nothing. The whole purpose of this isolation tank is to isolate all of your senses physically so that you don't smell anything, you don't see anything, you don't hear anything, and you're left with nothing except for your thoughts and your experience in there. You've been in the float tank 3 times. I've been in there once. I'm planning on going back sometime soon, but I know you've experienced both nothing and a whole lot of something in there. But tell us a little bit about how you use a float tank as a tool to get to this point of nothingness.
I absolutely will, because going in the float tank really changed my life, and it's one of the huge steps that I took towards appreciating nothing and wanting more nothing and nothing, seeing nothing as something. So being in the tank where you take everything out of the equation except your mind, it really allows you to explore where the boundaries are, or in my case, where they aren't. Because the only boundaries that you have when you're in this type of environment are the ones that are self-imposed. So it's almost a reflection on life. I'm a passionate artist, and I always say that art imitates life and life imitates art, or art reflects life or life reflects art. And being in this tank was very similar in that regard, in the sense that the nothingness that I experience in the tank, I'm able to translate into my life in the same way that I translate my life in an art form. So there are things that you can take away from that experience that can be relevant and applicable even outside of the tank. So
What have you experienced that has made just a world of difference in everything else that you do and think about?
So, for example, the way I view my own mortality has completely shifted as a result of going in this tank, because my experience was that when I took my body out of the equation and I didn't have any sensory input, including the force of gravity, my mind was free to go anywhere it wanted. And I decided to let go of any expectations or any boundaries that I may have had. And I just decided to be on the journey and let whatever happen. And that sense of freedom and release and getting in touch with your spiritual existence on a level that is in a different dimension is relevant and applicable to my life. Because even though I don't live my life in the tank, I'm a living, breathing human being out in the two-dimensional world, I still have that memory. And
three-dimensionals, right?
Pardon me.
As far as I know, we don't live in a two-dimensional world. I don't know. I thought that we had evolved to the point where we only needed two dimensions for a moment there. But I guess not. Okay, so the three-dimensional world, though.
The three-dimensional world. Right, we're not living on paper, I suppose, now that you mentioned it. What's in this tea?
I don't know. There's some good in there.
So living in the three-dimensional world, anytime I feel like I need that nothing again, or if things in the world are feeling overwhelming, or if my stress level reaches a certain threshold, I can always go back to that space in my mind. I always have that memory, and I always have that experience that I can go back to in my mind anytime I feel like I need more nothing. And I also know that my mind and my soul and my existence can survive and exist without my body. So being back in my body, people say your body is a temple. I really do feel that more than ever after being in the tank, that my body is my temple and it's my home and it's my shell for my soul. And that there's something else out there that I've experienced outside of my body and outside of the three-dimensional or two-dimensional world, however you choose to look at it, that there's something else out there, and what it is nothing. And that is the most valuable thing I think I have probably ever experienced, because now living in my body, I have an entirely different appreciation for all of the things that I do get to experience living in my body, because this life that I have in this world is what is between nothing and nothing for me. So coming from nothing, living in this body, in this life, in this world, and returning to nothing, now that I've experienced what that nothing feels like and what I'm like in it as part of the collective consciousness, not as far as what I'm like in my actual physical form, it helped me to realize how I want to live my life and how I want to maintain that present mind, because at any point, any one of us could be back in that state of nothing, which is a beautiful place. It's beautiful, it's calm, it's peaceful, it's wonderful. It's not scary, I had no fear. And I know I'm gonna be back there again. I can manifest that experience in the tank, or with death, we're all gonna be back there anyway, is what I think after having had that experience. maybe that's where my soul is going to go when I'm done living in my body, whenever that might be.
But when you talk about death, I think you're talking about death, at least the way it's been traditionally viewed, which is the physical stopping of your biological function. And you're almost talking about transcending the physical. You're talking about your soul and your spirituality and coming from nothing, meaning you don't have a physical existence in the world, and then going back to nothing, which is when you no longer physically exist in the world. Now, I don't know if I'm interpreting this right.
Well, you're talking about this world, the physical existence in this world,
right,
which is the reason that you and I are able to sit at this table and have this conversation right now and drink this tea and talk into this microphone. That's the physical existence that we're able to, the physical experience that we're able to have because we live in this world. And just because you're in that other place doesn't mean you don't exist. And that's what I've realized, is that death is not a finality. It's not a final destination. It's not the end. There is more to existence than what you have in your physical being. The nothing, that's the value of the nothing, the nothingness. And having seen that and felt it and being part of that and being in it, and knowing that I can still exist in a state of nothing without having this physical form. And it also, as a result of that experience, I feel very grateful to be back in my body, because there was a moment when I was in that nothingness where I wondered, it's sort of like we talk about the different paths and having two different paths. And I almost saw that other path as an option when I was in that place, and I wondered for a moment, for a brief moment, if I was going to be coming back into my body or if I was going to be going somewhere else.
Well, I think the majority of the world can either understand or sympathize with the fact that life or existence, essence, being, whatever you want to call it, doesn't end at the point where you are no longer physically present in the world. For me personally, I have the opinion, as an atheist, as somebody who doesn't believe in an existence after my physical existence, I'm very comfortable with my mortality too. And that's one of the reasons I've talked about practicing dying before, and doing that to help me come to terms with my mortality, my physical, my emotional, spiritual, mental. I'm of the opinion that when I'm no longer in this world, I'm gone. And that's okay. A lot of other people who come from spiritual traditions or backgrounds don't feel that way. But I think it just gives people a perspective that whether they're coming from a spiritual school of thinking or a religious version, or maybe even from my perspective, that death, this thing that everybody fears more than anything else, you don't need to fear it, regardless of your persuasion, regardless of what you think about what happens, if anything happens after it. Now, I want to transition a little bit too, because we're here, we're in this life, we're talking right now, and it's wonderful. You and I both love the abundance of the world and all the opportunities that we have, and we've had a lot of opportunities. And some of them are difficult, and some even overwhelming to get through. Like, how do you manage being an amazing mother and all the demands at work and still having the ability to work out after work and make sure that you're energized, that you are a source of invigoration for yourself and for everyone around you? I know you have a ton of competing demands for your time, for your money, for your energy. Can you give us an example of, for all these things that just seemingly build up, how do you get it so that things tend to compact back down and maybe become a little bit simpler than they otherwise would in such a chaotic, potentially chaotic environment?
Well, I think it's really about two things. It's about balance and it's about perspective. And I think that those two things going hand in hand is a huge way to be successful at balancing all the things in your life. And I have to be honest, I'm incredibly inspired by the value of simple declaration. And after reading that, it was inspirational for me to make some significant changes in my life towards simplifying. And that, in conjunction with me going in the float tank and experiencing the beauty of this idea of nothingness and this concept of nothingness and having experienced it for myself in a waking state, in a conscious waking state, that combined with the value of simple, it just goes hand in hand towards maintaining balance, creating balance where you may be unbalanced, and then maintaining that and staying centered even when things might feel a little off kilter.
That's where the perspective part comes in, is once you've created, tweaked, fixed, revived balance in whatever component that you need to, being able to maintain a certain perspective that allows you to have that almost be self-propagating, where you don't have to touch it, you don't have to think about it, it just is. So when you talk about creating balance, is there something recently where you felt like things are off kilter? They're just out of whack and you needed to get things back to a point where you could feel that sense of simplicity, that sense of balance. Is there something recently that's happened that you can tell us how you brought your life back into balance?
Yes, I have been going through some changes in my personal life, and one of the other tools that I used to help create balance in my life was actually a book that I read called Choosing Conscious Health for a Vibrant Life. And there's a specific chapter in there that talks about balance and evaluating yourself as far as where you're balanced in your life and where you're not. And all the different holistic components of your life, looking at the whole picture, physical, emotional, spiritual, everything. Where are you on track and where are you off track? And where are you dedicating your energy? And are you putting your energy too much in one area and not enough in another? And sometimes you don't even have the realization of where you're off or where something might be off until you sit down and take a look at it. And really, I had to make a list of writing out all the different areas and all the different competing priorities I had, and then rating each area to figure out, where am I on track with where I'm staying balanced and where am I out of balance? And where can, and then it also helped me decide, where do I need to take energy from and put it somewhere else? Or where's not getting enough energy that I need to redistribute some things? So that in combination with the perspective, you only have control over so much. You can't control other people. All you can really do is control yourself and your environment. And those are two areas of my life where I decided to make some significant change in order to accomplish simplification and nothing, actually. Because what I had was too much drama everywhere in some places of my life, in my relationship, in my home life, and it wasn't working for me anymore. And something significant needed to change. And part of the reason I realized this is, being in the tank, you leave everything in this world behind to go experience something else, even if it's only temporary. But then when you come back, it helped me to have a very different perspective on what was really important and what wasn't. And it created an environment for me, that environment of nothingness, where I could really take a look at myself under the microscope at a cellular level and decide what fits into that and what doesn't. And that started me on an entirely new course in my life.
Let's take it back for a moment, though, and you're talking about your system, which is based on mindfulness and self-awareness, but you get into a maybe quiet room and you write, and you have all of these different facets of your life, whether it's being a mother or an employee or whatever it may happen to be. Do you have a certain trigger that makes you reevaluate that something may be out of balance? Or is this the kind of thing that you do weekly, that you do monthly? How might somebody who wants to have more balance or to create a system to maintain balance, how could they replicate what you do? Can you explain that a little bit better?
Well, I'm going to share with you something that my mother shared with me when I was earlier in this journey, maybe about 6 months ago or so, and I was starting to feel out of whack, I guess you could say. I didn't even know what it was that was going on. It's almost like you have just an inkling that something isn't right, but you can't quite put your finger on what it is. And I think we've all been in this place at one time in our lives or another, where something just isn't quite right. And the interesting part of balance is that one area of your life can be unbalanced, and it can have almost like a ripple effect into the other areas of your life, even if you have balance in those areas. It's all connected. You are a whole person. So if one part of you is dissatisfied, that can filter into all the other satisfied parts. And so at the time, I didn't even know what it was that was off or what to do about it. I just knew that something wasn't quite right. I just had a feeling or a sense that something needed to change. I needed some kind of a change. I just didn't know what it was. And I was talking to my mother about it. I just didn't feel entirely content, and I wasn't really sure why or what to do about it. And she said, when it comes to making change in your life or participating in change or being a catalyst for change, everybody has a tipping point. And when you reach your tipping point, you know. And people can tip pretty far in one direction or another direction without tipping all the way over. And human beings are amazing, resilient creatures that can tolerate extreme environments and still survive. So everybody can tip pretty far in one direction or another, but when you tip over, you know it. And that is exactly what happened to me. And even when I reached the tipping point, I didn't even realize it at the time. I didn't realize it until months later that that had been my tipping point, when I realized that I needed to make a change. So sometimes you don't always know it in the moment, but now that I'm in a different place and I appreciate that sense of nothing and that present mind that can keep me there, I have a much better awareness, I think, if I were to reach another tipping point, of what that looks like and feels like after having had that experience.
Yeah. So it's again, this concept of awareness of the possibilities of yourself, of the world, of the universe, and also that inward-facing awareness too, where you have, even if you don't know what it is, you get a little tingling, a little sensation that says something's not right. And you're talking about how that ripples through other components of your life. And sometimes you may not even notice that either. And thank you for bringing up the value of simple declaration, by the way. I didn't prompt her, everybody. She brought that up spontaneously. Thank you, Jesse. That is a good segue, though, because you know, one of the things that I talk about in the value of simple declaration is this concept of self-awareness and how you need to take it. Nobody gives you self-awareness. Nobody puts it on a platter and says, here you go, Joel, here's your self-awareness, hope you like it. You have to really go out and train yourself and figure out what skills, what tools, what resources you need for self-awareness. So it sounds like that's something that really resonates with you. Are there other components of the declaration that, you know, as you look and you print it out and you say, this is something that I want to focus on today or this week or this month, do you have some kind of a routine or some way of concentrating on a certain facet of your life, whether it's based on the declaration or something else, and then trying to make sure that you give that the focus that it needs?
I think you bring up a really good point about the awareness piece and how nobody gives it to you. It's all about taking ownership. And taking ownership over your whole life and your whole being and your whole existence. And you asked me earlier, how can other people recreate what I've done? Well, only those people can answer that question for themselves, because it is such an individual. We are all individuals and we are all unique. And just because what I did in my life worked for me doesn't mean that you can just take that as a cookie cutter and stamp it onto other people and expect it to fit exactly the same way.
No hacks, huh?
No.
No simple tricks?
No, I don't think so. No okay. Magic bullet.
All right.
That's not the way it works. That's not the way awareness works in my experience. And the tank, it relates to this as well, because you had a very different experience in the tank than I did, because I'm a different person. I have a different mind. I have a different being. I have a different soul. So when you take that close a look at yourself, you're obviously going to have a different experience than I am, because I'm not looking at Joel in the tank. I'm looking at myself in the tank. So part of creating that awareness is finding, I think, whatever method works for you, whether it's reaching your tipping point or having a spiritual moment that just creates some kind of a feeling within you that is new. And instead of disregarding that and letting it go by you or not paying any attention to that, to stop and look at that and really focus on that and appreciate it before just letting it go. And I think that that's the awareness piece. And when you talk about riding at the top of the crest of the wave, that requires constant awareness. Because if you think about it, the moment you lose your focus, you fall, you tumble into the wave and whatever lies beneath it. And so I think that's another part of it too, is letting go of fear. And you asked me about the declaration on the value of simple, something that I not only created, but also continue to live on a daily basis as a principle, is to choose uncertainty over unhappiness. And that is a choice. And it takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to make that kind of a choice. But that's when we were talking earlier about sometimes you just get a feeling or a sense that something isn't right. Sometimes it can be really difficult to get to the point where you even want to make a change, because that's scary to think about the unknown. And you're comfortable in where you're at and what you're doing, even if you're not totally satisfied with it, it's something that you know and it's familiar. And so choosing uncertainty, you don't know what lies in front of you. You don't know where the path leads, but you decide as a leap of faith to try going down it no matter what. And even if it leads to a place of nothing, being okay with that and being satisfied with that and being happy and content on the journey, regardless of where the path might lead. And even if it leads to nothing, to think that that's a wonderful place.
I love how things keep coming back to nothing.
That's what we're here to talk about.
It's fun. Well, we're here to talk about a lot of different things. And this has been my experience too. Until my personal renaissance began about 3.5 years ago, I was all about stability and comfort, and uncertainty scared the hell out of me. And now it's not just invigorating. It's not like I'm some kind of adrenaline junkie, but my life feels so much more alive and vivid and rich, not just for me, but for the other people that I interact with, because I take risks. Sometimes they're really big risks too. And I don't surf, so I've never been on the top of the crest of the wave, as you put it. That might be a little bit scary for me actually. But if you want to get there, if you want to get to a place, whether it's a physical place or whether it's a spiritual place or any other kind of place, you need to make changes and you need to take those risks. So I'm glad that you highlighted it. One of the ways that I've seen the creativity that's coming out of you, in part that we hear too, is I talked about you are a lover of music and art, and I've seen a lot of your artwork too. And one of the things that I've always been impressed with, and people who listen to the show, there are a lot of really creative folks out there, but sometimes they just don't have the time to create. I'm curious, as somebody who is very busy and you have a lot of different obligations, you still seem to find that time to paint or to create these pieces of artwork. How do you do that? How do you carve out these little slices of time and create this thing that's really cool long term when all you get is these teeny little slivers over a long period?
Well, that's where the balance piece comes in. And I think prioritizing, and how you prioritize your time and how you prioritize your life and how you prioritize yourself into that whole picture. So we all play our roles. Everyone has their responsibilities. And sometimes I think dedicating time to yourself or your creative outlet can easily fall to the bottom of the list. But where I have found some of the most value personally, as far as my own development and growth goes, is prioritizing that time higher on the list, and also choosing a medium that allows me to have flexibility and not feeling like I need to overcommit myself to finish necessarily a piece of art in a certain amount of time. But again, to be on the journey and let it evolve, whether it's 5 minutes at a time or 5 hours at a time. So that's part of the reason why I'm very attracted to painting as a creative outlet, because it doesn't matter how much time you have, even if it's just a couple brush strokes, it's an opportunity to release something that's inside of you in a creative and positive and healthy way. So it's not even about the end result. It's really about the process. And that's the part that I love. And everybody has a minute or 5 minutes or sometimes even longer than that. It's just about how you choose to spend your time. It's a choice. And that's the awareness piece, is that it's a choice. Where am I going to get more value right now? Considering my physical and mental and emotional state of mind, looking inside at myself, what do I need most right now to be able to either maintain or restore balance in my life?
Yeah, this is just a reoccurring theme in that you're not looking to get somewhere in particular. You're not looking to finish and to bust through that finish line and put up your hands in celebration and have everybody come over and pat you on the back. It doesn't sound like that's what it's all about. And that's one of the nice things too. I mean, you talked about your evolution, the first one at 12 and then at 22, and now we're 33. And I'm wondering, you know, as you go through this progression, and it's roughly every decade, where you are in your life, do you anticipate that you will evolve more or that you will evolve faster based on the change that's happening to you right now? Do you see your next evolution coming 5 years from now or 3 years from now? Or is this something that you're going to try to intentionally go about making big changes more frequently as a result of the things that you've recently experienced?
That's an excellent question. Self-reflection is something that I practice on a daily basis. And when I listen to your question,
it's hard to unpack. Like, I ask long questions.
Well, it's not so much that. I mean, you and I have had lots of conversations, and some of them have been pretty lengthy. But it's more about letting go of expectations, which is a very difficult thing to do. And again, a conscious choice. And this is something that I think is part of what led me to having these, what I consider successful experiences in the tank, is the ability to let go of expectations. Not that crossing the finish line isn't a fantastic feeling. I mean, I ran the Twin Cities Marathon in 2002, actually right around the time I was going through that experience of personal transformation in my early 20s, was around the same time I ran the marathon, because I was thinking maybe that is the kind of change I need. Maybe I need to start running. And even though I'm brand new to running and I've never run before, maybe I'll just run a marathon and see how that goes and see if running is something that I'm any good at. And of course, now I'm very passionate about running and I love it. But that was the very first time I started running. And that was the very first race I ever did, was the marathon. And there's nothing like crossing the finish line in that type of experience. And that was phenomenal. But then it's over. And then what? Then you look back and you're like, oh, that was great. I ran the marathon and I crossed the finish line. And what's next? However, when you practice self-reflection on a daily basis and self-assessment on a daily basis, it prolongs the experience. So it's not about, again, what's next? When is the next time I'm going to go through with this? And looking always, it's important to look forward and have a vision, I think, and have some sense of direction. I think it's also important to feel comfortable shifting that direction at any moment, at any stage in your life, depending on what you need at the time and what you want at the time and what is going to help you to live that satisfied, fulfilled life that you want. Because all of us have that within our span of control. It just comes down to choices. And what kind of choices you make and what kind of results you're going to get from those choices. So to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I don't know when the next time is going to be that I'm going to undergo a transformation like this. Maybe it'll be close to this time. Maybe it'll be a long time from now. I just trust that when I get to that point, I'll know. And then I'll do something about it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know a lot of things either, but I do know one thing. And that's that I want to ask you another question, We've talked about a lot and we've covered a lot of ground. And hopefully the people who are listening here have extracted one or two gems, the types of things that instead of just thinking and saying, oh, that sounded cool, the type of thing that they can say, yes, I will take some small action, some small change in my life, a little experiment, an attempt to go for uncertainty as opposed to unhappiness as a result of talking. But I want to ask you, is there something that we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
Yes, there are a couple of other things on the declaration on the value of simple that have really stood out to me and really have been applicable and relevant in my life that I have been practicing on a regular basis. And I don't have the declaration in front of me. I'm not reading a script right now. I just have it all in my head because I have the declaration on my refrigerator and I look at it every day. So burning inside with passion, I think that's key. Being intentional, I think that's critical. You do say also that knowledge and desire are nothing without action. That's that choice and that awareness. And don't just think about it or dream about it or wish about it. Do something about it. Don't try. Do. Just do it. Because you're never going to know what's going to happen unless you do. And you mentioned earlier taking risks. I think it's important if you're going to take a risk to take a calculated and thoughtful risk. And not just a risk that's on a whim. I mean, you don't just want to up and make decisions that are going to impact your entire life without being thoughtful about it and intentional. That's the intentional piece that you talk about. So I think those are a couple of other things that are really important to consider. And one other thing is, what is it that you say about rocking life's basics?
Yes.
Not sexy, but it's incredibly rewarding. You still got to take care of the basic stuff, your day-to-day, your daily living activities. Mm-hmm. It's part of living in this body in whatever world, two-dimensional, three-dimensional, four-dimensional, five-dimensional, whatever kind of a world you happen to be living in your own existence, understanding that there are certain things that need to get done regardless and being okay with that and appreciating that and doing that. And also understanding that you don't always necessarily have to think about what's next if you can focus on what is, even if what is at the moment is nothing. Maybe that's what everybody just needs a little more of, is nothing, instead of always wanting something more, better, different. Either being happy with nothing or being happy where you are, or creating something new and taking action and being courageous and having the strength to do something different.
Being content and being grateful with what you have doesn't absolve you of the need or the desire to pursue something else or pursue something different.
Exactly. And just why be complacent? The world has too many things to offer to not go out and explore it all. It's too exciting and you never know how long it's going to last. And why not enjoy every moment, even if that moment is filled with something or nothing or whatever it might be, and love and curate your existence.
I think we've just broke the world record for most utterances of the word nothing in approximately an hour span. I don't know if Guinness keeps track of that kind of thing, but I'm going to submit this to them and see if we've shattered something. If we do want to know a little bit more about your journey, is there some kind of resource that you suggest that we look at to help you help us understand a little bit more about you and what you're going through or where you are going?
Yes, my two most inspirational resources in my life, which have been thevalueofsimple.com, Joel Zaslavsky's blog, or choosingconscioushealth.com, which is the author of the book that I read, Choosing Conscious Health for a Vibrant Life, Kristen Wernicke. That's her website. Two very impactful, inspirational people in my life who I have learned a tremendous amount from.
That is awesome. And I did not pay her to say that, everybody.
Nope.
Just so we're clear.
That was free.
Well, this has been inspiring for me. And I know as I listen to this back, and maybe there's some other people who are also going to want to listen to this back, all the resources that we talked about, the book that Jesse just mentioned, some of the other things, they will all be in the show notes. But right now, I just want to say, Jesse, thank you a ton for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. And I'm feeling like doing at least a couple of things differently as a result of listening to what you just said. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a joy and a pleasure.
All right. Now, was that fresh or was that fresh? That was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air fresh. And who knew that you may never truly arrive at the answer? And that's totally cool. Who knew how one day in seventh grade could change your life so drastically? And who knew that living your life at the end of a cul-de-sac can lead to beautiful nothingness? Thanks again to my great friend Jesse for rocking this episode of Smart and Simple Matters so much. You can get all of the resources and grooviness we spoke about in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM031. And thanks to you again for listening to the show. Between your support, hugs and high fives, a new sun, finding more nothing, and getting the nothing blues, life sure feels really freaking grand right now. I just want to continue finding more ways to make you feel the same way as I do. So let me know how I might achieve that by contacting me in one or all of a number of ways. Send an email to joel@valueofsimple.com, a tweet to my Twitter handle @JoelZaslavsky, catch me on Google+, or join the Refuge of Simplicity community at valueofsimple.com/newsletter to tell me what you want more or less of and how you want it. I've embarked on one giant new journey with Clark Zaslavsky, and I don't mind charting a new path with you too if we can make some magic happen together. Once again, the show notes are at valueofsimple.com/SASM031. Oh, and by the way, I hope your cup runneth over with gratitude, contentment, and abundance of nothing or everything. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple. Hey, it's Joel. I'm still here. It's pretty rad that you're still listening after 10 seconds of nothing but silence. You're one of the few people who stuck this out to the end, and I'd like to say thank you. Send me a tweet @JoelZaslavsky or share a quick note on G+ or Facebook letting me know that you heard this secret message and that you have the nothing blues too. I promise not to reward you with another song, at least not for a little while. Okay. Peace and humptiness. I'm out.